Okay, so we've been doing the introduction of Rav Isaac Scher to the Cheshbon HaNefesh, and last week spoke about what he said is the first half of his introduction. The first half of his introduction had to do with the origin of thinking, like how thoughts develop within a person's mind, and he went into that. Hi, just started. So, just to review, we did this thing last week about that when a person has a passing emotion that goes through his heart, through his character structure, it in and of itself doesn't cause any type of activity. It doesn't influence any activity because it's just a passing emotion. But what it does is it begets a certain type of thought that's tainted by that emotion, and then that thought brings a person to act in a certain way. If a person isn't tuned into this process, then you'll miss it because it's not that evident. You know, you have a passing thought of anger. And then you reason that what somebody did is not proper. So the reasoning that it's not proper is on the surface reasoning. It's on the surface. It's just logic, but it really isn't logic. It's logic that's originated by a passing emotional state. So he says that one of the ways that you can key into this stuff is to think of the very first thing that went through the mind as a thought was being formulated. So he gives the example, you hear about somebody, forget exactly what he said, you hear about what somebody did and you felt demoralized, and then all of a sudden you're focusing on what they're doing. So the demoralization is kind of like a bad thing. And therefore the thoughts subsequent thoughts right. are tainted thoughts, and they're influenced by an emotional state, and they don't really represent pure unbiased thinking. That's what we did last week. Now this week I wanted to do, I don't think we'll finish the introduction, but maybe we'll finish half of what's left. And he's going to talk now about a separate thing that we have to clue into. And that separate thing is the idea of hergel. Hergel, we'll say, hergel is being accustomed to something, habituation, habit forming. So it's at the bottom of page 6. So he says, Ho'ikar Hasheni, the second major thing, Hu Hadas, it is the knowledge, B'mahos, in the essence, Shilton HaHergel, of the rule of habit. Like the rule that habit exercises over us. We have to know about it. Shalomadnu mechachomeinu zal, we learn from the chazal, shekocho godol ma'od, that the force of habit is very great. Adam nasa eved, the person becomes a servant, a slave, l'shilton hergelo, to the rule of his habit. Meshubad, he is he's indebted, or he's I don't know exactly how to translate it. He's drawn l'ol memshalto, to the yoke of its rule. V'nilkad, and he's captured bavosos hanhogoso, with the ropes of its leadership. So these are all flowery terms to try to explain what happens when a person has a habit. V'hamisragil b'aveira, and if someone gets into the habit of doing a sin, ovdo hatikva, the hope is lost, sheyoshru v'yachzer bo, that he's going to do tshuva and turn things around.
Isn't that what they say about the Yetzer Hara? That the first time you sin...
Yeah, he's going to actually talk about
that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hang in there. Yeah. Absolutely. So, v'cheskoso, and his chazoka means that his presumption, meaning it's presumed pertaining to him, lavor leha, to violate this thing, gamba asid, also in the future, li shumatzor, without any restraint, without anything holding back. So we know about habits, but this is already taking it to an area where not everyone, you know, thinks about it in these terms. So he says, when the force of habit attaches itself to a sin, it becomes a habitual thing, then that becomes a very insidious type of thing, because it creates a virtual certainty that the sin is going to be repeated. Then he goes on. He says, "Kedi'isu v'kedushin." This is on page 8, the second. Well, it's not really a paragraph; it's just a break, because English takes more of the page than Hebrew. So he has these breaks on the Hebrew side to, you know, make room for the English. So he says, "Kedi'isu v'kedushin," as we see in Kedushin and Tractate Kedushin, Daf Mem Amud Be'Aleph. Shein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzareif Machshava Rava Maisa. And Hashem doesn't attach bad thoughts to a deed, meaning that a sin is a deed, a sinful deed. If a person wants to sin, and it does some reason or other, it doesn't happen, so Hashem doesn't punish the person for having done the sin, as a rule. So someone wanted to sin, and unfortunately, he got into the car to go do whatever it was, and the car didn't start. So, you know, he couldn't do it. Poor guy, he couldn't do a sin. So we have the rule of Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzareif Machshava Ra L'idei Ma'aseh, that Hashem doesn't take the bad thought and say that it's as if you sinned.
Would that be equivalent to also if somebody wants to go and do something but doesn't have the co-op or the strength to actually go ahead and do it?
Yeah.
If something in the back of their mind just stops them from doing it, you would say that's the same?
Well, that's already an even more praiseworthy kind of a thing. It's not as if something happened and he couldn't do it. Something happened and he didn't want to do it. Like he didn't even have the desire to do the sin at the end of the day.
Even if it was because of a... like they didn't have the weakness, or they didn't have the I don't know what it is. Couldn't. I mean, if you say somebody wants to commit murder or commit a real sin, right, but then just doesn't go through with it because they get stage fright, or they, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, on a scale, it's still less of a sin than someone who, you know, planned to commit murder, and the gun didn't shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Would they say if you miss your mother-in-law, you know, shoot again? Oh, I love my mother-in-law.
Rabbi?
But the point is that, you know, if you miss, you know, you miss the shot. So Well, I don't know about that, but certainly if you you couldn't find your gun or something like that, your case where you just couldn't get yourself to do it, that's a much better, that's less of a sinner, because he really couldn't, he at no point brought himself to really do it, or he brought himself not to do it. Like when he had the ability, he didn't do it, so that's...
But obviously in that case, it doesn't take away completely, because she may, a week or two later, face himself in the same situation again.
That's a different cheshbon, that's a different accounting a week or two later. But for this accounting, yeah.
He's a good person.
Yeah, he's a good person. I don't know, he's that good. He's that good, but he's not...
Rabbi, okay. Two things really quickly. So one is it's interesting to see how Hashem differs from human beings. Intent to commit murder in this society is a crime, right? So even if you didn't do it, you still can get punished for it, right?
Yeah. So
that's how it's different. And also the other thing is that. If there's a thought to commit an avera and the avera isn't committed, you said that in Kedushin it says that Hashem, that you're not punished for that.
Yeah, we're just getting into it.
But it's different from a mitzvah, because if you have the intention to do a mitzvah,
right, it says that
you get rewarded for it.
Right. If for some reason you couldn't do it,
yeah.
Again, you were going to shul, and I tried to go to davening today at Harvard. There's no parking. I'm driving around and around and around at a certain point.
So you get this car, right?
I hope so. Maybe I should have gone there early, so to say, to give me 10 minutes to drive around in a circle, So I didn't. The jury's out on that one. But if a person went to do something unforeseen came up, then you do get credit for the mitzvah. But anyway, so let's look at this thing where he's going to talk about this idea of a person this idea that normally when you set out to sin and it doesn't happen, you don't get blamed for it by the Almighty. And then he says that we see in Kedushin that Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tzarif Machshava Ra L'Idei Ma'aseh. So it's the second line in this second break or whatever. Avol Ba'over Aveiro V'Shona Bo. But what if somebody does a sin and then repeats it? It means he does it. He does it more habitually. Then Hashem does connect it to a deed, meaning he considers it as if the sin actually happened and the person gets punished for it. Upirish Rashi explains that even if he didn't actually violate the sin, he gets punished for his thought, his intention to do the sin, mishum she de ein chazaroso l'shem shemayim, his change is not l'shem shemayim, ela mishum shel hutzrachla. It only happened. Because it didn't work out for him. I gave the example of, something you couldn't control stopping him. I'm not sure if he's talking about that, but just a moment. I guess it means that when he didn't do it, he didn't do tshuva from doing it, and there was no possibility that he would do tshuva from doing it. See, many of us have had the experience where you want to do something bad, and then you get stopped by some, you know, and then a minute later you don't want to do it anymore. Even in something so simple as eating food that you shouldn't eat, you know, second portion of dessert or whatever. So you want to do it, it's hard to control, but then a minute later, if you don't do it, then you don't have the urge anymore. So if, let's say, you got prevented from doing it, so it could be that if time would have, you know, been allowed to run, you would have done tshuva, you wouldn't have done the thing anyway. But if it's something that you've done habitually, so it was headed towards a certainty that you would do it. So once there's a certainty that you would do it, if it was cut off by circumstances and you didn't do it, too bad. Then Hashem sees it as a sin. Meaning it's not a hocus pocus, it's just that he's holding by doing it. The fact that he didn't actually do it, that God doesn't take that into account, since he was a person that was for sure going to do it. He has a track record, right? It's in his personality makeup. That once he's given this thing, it's like, you know, waving a red flag at a bull, he's going to charge. Now, he couldn't charge because for one reason or another, but he's a charger. He was going to charge at the sin.
If you're wrestling in your mind about doing something wrong, and you overcome the bad thought and don't do it, you're not going to get punished for the wrestling and the thought of doing something wrong, right?
No, absolutely not. But if let's say you didn't get around to doing it, not because you wrestled. That was his case more. That was Mr. Sanger said, you know, you were wrestling with it and you didn't get around to doing it because you wrestled yourself down. That's a pretty good guy already. You know, he conquered his Yetzer Hara. But he's talking about when, he didn't get around to doing it for an external reason, I imagine. So if it's a regular person, he doesn't get credit for the sin. But if it's someone who sins habitually in this area, then he does get credit. He does get the sin on his record.
Just for thinking the thought?
Yeah, we're trying to, yeah.
So again, not to get egregious, yeah, but I wish somebody who's committed murder 3 times and the 4th time they're about to do it again, but the guy doesn't fire off, because they're almost a serial killer almost, you would say.
They
were going to do it, wasn't it?
Right. He has 4 executions upstairs that they'll give him, not 3. You know, if they didn't catch him down here. You know. So, the Al-Kain, this is, I think, the 5th line. Al-Kain, and therefore, hispidu olav yoser me'almes. They eulogized over him, they gave a hesped over him, more than over someone who's dead. K'mamorim zal, as they said, al tifkul meis, do not cry over somebody who's dead. Bal togodu lo, do not... they did certain things to way of mourning. B'chu b'cho, you know, cry very much. L'holech, someone who goes, I guess he does this, who sins repeatedly. Kilo yoshuvod. That is, misha over avera v'shanubo. That's someone who did a sin and repeated it. So he's more, his situation is more lamentable than the situation of somebody who actually dies. So somebody who dies, you know, they go to a better place. But somebody who's living and does a sin repeatedly, oy vey, what are you going to do about him?
Is there a definition here as to what is considered repeatedly? I mean, are we saying once, twice, 3 times, 4? I mean, when do you become a...
The language of the Gemara is over avera v'shanabo. He did a sin and he repeated it.
So once you do the second time,
you're already in there, right? Right.
But now, if I guess the first time you do it and you don't go through with it, it's fine. But if the first time you do go through with it, and the second time it doesn't work, is the second time considered already the repeat?
Or probably not.
You get to the third time, then because you've only done
right.
Once. Technically.
It sounds like that the pattern, I mean, the way I read the Gemara, the pattern of... is established by 2 times, So after the second has been completed, then the habituation is deemed to be there, and then from then on, you're like an over avera v'shonova. Okay. Now it's the fourth line up from the bottom of this piece, in the middle. So it says v'gam gilu sodo shel kol ha'chehergol. That it also tells us the secret of habituation. Sheha'over v'shona, that someone who violates and then repeats it, nasis lo keheter, becomes like it's permissible to him. Shetekef bereshis hergelo, for immediately. At the beginning of his habit forming, Poel kol kach, it works, the habit works so much, lahachlish es haregesh hapnimi shahayolo, to weaken the inner feeling that he had, ad shalo lahargish od mor shamayim, and to a point that he doesn't feel the fear of heaven, v'lios porek ol baverozo, and that he's throwing off the yoke of heaven in this sin. That by doing this sin, he's in this sin at least he's throwing off the yoke of heaven, because here's Rav Isaac Sher's explanation of the concept of over v'shona bo. His explanation is that there is, I guess, an inherent holiness within a person that rebels against something that's improper. So you do something improper, you go, you feel bad about it. But when you do it repeatedly, then that resistance to bad is muted and sort of stifled and eventually extinguished. And then it becomes something that, it's not so look after.
In this case, so we're referring to, I know I've talked about sin here, but are we talking about habits in general? Here it's referring to a sin. If you do a habit that, you click your knuckles, or you do something that's it's more of a social issue more than it is an actual sin.
He's going to talk about different kinds of habits in the next paragraph. And it sounds from the sound of it that it's just about anything. The way he talks about it, he says, when you do a habit, do something habitually, it becomes something you have to do, you're almost enslaved by the habit. Say, somebody reads the paper every morning. I don't think it's sinful, but you have to get that paper, while you're eating breakfast. So after you start doing it for a few weeks, if it's not there, you feel a real loss here. Something's really not right. You don't have your paper. So that would probably be a habit, just a free-floating habit. Here, the habit sort of has an influence over the force that would stop the behavior, namely your neshama, and the habituation of doing the vera repeatedly then comes in conflict with the neshama, and he says that the way it works is that one extinguishes the other, like they're in a ring together. Neshama says one thing, and the power of habit keeps fighting it and attempting to shut down that resistance, and guess who wins? So what he's saying is that the one who wins is the habit.
Rabbi, does a habit differ from a routine? Because certain things in our life that we do routinely make life a lot easier for us, how we get up in the morning or what we do, when we get to work and stuff. And those are, I guess you could call them habits, but the routines are useful things that help organize our time and stuff like that. So,
I guess that a routine is something like you drive to work every day, and you go in a certain way. So if there's a traffic jam, you don't get discombobulated if you have to take a different route. That would be a routine. I mean, this is he doesn't talk about it. I'm just giving you my impression of
if you like your coffee one way in the morning and they serve it to you differently, and you get all upset, right?
That's
right?
More like a habit, right?
Yeah.
If it's something of a personal need, then it starts becoming a habit. If it becomes just the way you do something, you know. So some people, I guess, that, you know, some people are, that anything they do as a routine becomes a habit. If I take this trip, then you know I'm so uptight that if I have to take a different way, I get psychologically taken apart. But that, you know, and then they can get to an extreme where people aren't even normal. But there are all many different gradations of it. But in answer to your question, I imagine that would be a fair way of looking at it. Yeah.
So you don't get upset if it's disrupted, right?
Yeah, it's a routine. It's just a way of doing it. It's a way of doing it. I know that if I get up and then get dressed and then have breakfast, I do better than if I get up and have breakfast and then get dressed.
Okay.
But if it happens that my order was changed because I got a phone call or because I had to get up earlier or I had to go and eat breakfast, whatever it is, so if it's just a routine, then all right, so I have a different routine today. Once it's got to be, then it's a habit. You know? Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, so now, we're up to the second break in the Hebrew on page 8. So he says, Be'er inyan ahergu b'chol tzdadav. He explained the matter of hergul, of habit, he explained it in all of its facets. Hatzad ha-tov, v'hatzad ha-roshabo, the good side and the bad side of it. Motzi'inanu, I'm sorry, I didn't translate the Hebrew exactly. Well, I believe it is an explanation of habit in all of its aspects, the good part and the bad part. Motzi'inanu b'sefer nechbadzeh, we find in this great, very honored, wonderful book. From Ayin Bo, and someone who reads the book carefully, Roa, he will see, Sheyesh Shlosha Ofanei Hergel, that there are three types or aspects of habit. The habit has three kinds of aspects. There are three, I guess, categories of habit. Yesh hergel, there is a habit, chitzoni, there is an outward habit. Kodo murgol v'pula achas zman rav. That if someone gets habituated towards one type of activity, zman rav, for a long time, excuse me, nasa hergel zeh, this habit becomes, l'taiva chazoka, becomes a strong lust, Bechefetz lev, in the desires of the heart, l'male hergelo hatmidi, to fulfill this habit, to satisfy this habit, all the time, achekosha al ha'odam l'kavsho l'sakna, becomes hard for a person to conquer this thing and to fix it. It becomes such a self-perpetuating thing, this habit, that even in a non, you know, totally benign arena, once a person has a habit, then the habit demands its perpetuation, that it should continue to be followed. Now, this is very interesting. He says, "V'yesh od hergel kosha mimenu." There's another type of habit that's more difficult for that than it. Kishu mishtatef im hamidos vataivos. And that is when the habit joins forces with character traits and lusts. And when they come together, then the habit becomes more formidable. Kamo, for example, hapat patonus. It means like chattering, or talking a lot. For ha'histachlos, or staring, like someone gets into the habit of staring at things that he shouldn't stare at. Now, kshekocho pishnayim mehataivos vahargelim kolachas mehen b'fnei atzman. That once you have the two joined together, then their force is doubly greater than the each one on its own, like double than the sum of its parts. Let's say one is not supposed to speak Lashon Hara, but there's a strong inner urge to speak Lashon Hara. So the inner urge is something that pushes a person to speak Lashon Hara. Someone is a victim of habit. A habit causes them to do something perpetually. So if you take habit and you join it to speaking Lashon Hara, so then they work on each other, and they fuel each other in a way that the sum of the two is much greater than the sum of the type of habit that just entails having your shower and then your breakfast or something like that. Because there you're not dealing with an inherent urge within the person, which in and of itself is very, very powerful. People aren't born with the urge to have their shower before their breakfast, or vice versa. It's just a habit that you get into. And Mr. Bloch is correct that sometimes it's just a routine and sometimes it's a habit. But let's say even if it's a habit, it's not a habit that has a linkage to some inner urge within the person. But once it does, and then you have a habit, now already you have a reaction. It's like a combustion between two things in a chamber. It creates a much stronger habit. Then he says, very interesting, he says, "Vayoser kasha mikulam," and the most difficult one of all, "hu hahergol b'machshava." That's the hergol of thinking. "In machshava achas kasha es libo," if one thought conquered his heart, "harei nasis letzir machshavoso," it becomes the focus of his thoughts. "Vasechel atzmo nilkad bereshis," and the intellect itself. Oh, just a minute. Okay, the intellect itself is trapped in the net. "For ein moshielo," and there's no salvation. So he says that, we would think that if a person has the habit of habitually indulging his lusts, then that's something, that's the strongest force of all. But he says that the force of repeatedly thinking about something the same way is an even greater force of habituation. I mean, to me that's fascinating. You think about something a certain way, then that's a habit. And it's a more mind-bending thing than the habit of doing, fulfilling a lust repeatedly. You think about something a certain way, then that becomes ingrained into your personality, and that's the way you think about it.
Do you think, Rabbi, that necessarily leads to a habitual action?
Sure. Sure. I mean, you think about... It's like Jews being Democrats. They have it in their heads that they're supposed to be Democrats. So it doesn't matter who's running. I'm not saying we should be Republicans either, but they always say that Jews have generations of habit that, as a knee-jerk reaction, they vote Democrat every election. I don't know if it's a good example, but
that's
I don't think it's such a bad example. I was going to say, you have a communal thing that this is the way we think about a certain thing, so that tends to resist. It becomes a force in and of its own that's resistant to logic. So he said, the last line of this section of the Hebrew, he says, it becomes the focus of his thinking. He said, the seichel becomes trapped in the net, v'ein moshilo, you can't save it. Meaning that this you're talking about thinking. So seemingly, if you would ask me, and ask you, or ask almost anyone, are your thoughts motivated by thinking? So you'll say, well, what are thoughts if they're not thinking? After all, thoughts are thinking. So he's saying, no, it's not true. Thoughts can be habit and... I said...
Yeah. So would you say that habitual thought will, be conditioned to a closed-minded person? You know, like, he thinks in a certain way and he cannot break from...
Yeah, that's exactly what he says. Well, he's not talking about the total thought process. He's talking about once a thought is habitual, and you do it over and over and over again, then that thought holds your seichel, your thinking, captive, and it prevents the free exercise of seichel, bringing it to bear on this issue, because the habituation of thinking is more powerful than seichel.
Yeah. So an analogy comes to me. In psychology, they've discovered that when you think certain thoughts, it creates neural pathways in your brain, and it's almost like you're digging, like there's a rut, and every time you're thinking the same thought, it creates a rut, a deeper and deeper rut, and it becomes harder and harder to dig yourself out of.
Wow.
But they've also discovered that when you do therapy, it changes the neural pathways in your brain.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So there's something happens in the actual body. You know.
Yeah, physiological
change.
Yeah. But like you can see, like you just do yourself a rut. You know, you think a certain way. You know, I got to have ice cream after. You know, every time it's like it's like a.
Well, that's more like it's like a
broken record. You know.
Yeah. All right. So now, okay. So now what he said is that the habits. The force of habit forms a greater hierarchy in terms of authority over what I do than thinking about what I should do. Like the force of habit is going to cause you to be a person whose thought process is being held captive by the habit. So it sounds pretty bad at this point, because he's saying that in the conflict between habits and thinking, the habit is going to win.
Is it the same as the habit in the shama, you were saying before?
He's not talking really about how it works exactly. He's just saying that that's the way it is.
So is it something when you do an action, it becomes so ingrained in you that you start thinking about it all the time?
No. It becomes so ingrained that your natural thought process, which might have otherwise had you think differently about it, isn't allowed to do that by the force of habit, and you go around thinking that this is what you should be doing. And if you didn't have the habit, let's say if you were just born at the age that you're at now somehow, and you were just like sort of dropped into the world at this point, and you faced this situation without the habit, your otherwise unaffected logic system would bring you to a different decision. But because of the fact that you have a habit, you've habituated yourself acting a certain way or thinking a certain way, then that will tend to carry the day.
So you can't see outside the box anymore, as it were.
Right. In this area, the habit overwhelms the thought, the
and
thinking.
There are very few alternatives, right?
Well, now he's going to talk about what an antidote to it.
Okay.
So he says, well, idach gisa, on the other hand, rav tuv tzofon b'koach ha-hergel. that you can do good through the force of habit. That you can, a person can, and remember, this is a book about how you can actually improve yourself. It's a very hard thing to improve yourself. So he says that the same sort of irresistible force that drives a person under and prevents his ability, you know, prevents him from thinking logically,
yes,
will also serve, on the other hand, if it becomes a good habit. So he says, Rav Tuf Tzofun B'Korcha Hergel, Shenot Hashem Yisparach B'Nefesh HaAdam, that Hashem implanted in the soul of man, Ki Kol Avod HaSchinuch HaMusar, that all of the work of training of Musar, meaning the person who wants to improve himself, and he wants to train himself to act properly, it's all done, Nasa Bezroso, it's done with its assistance, V'Kocho, and it's through its force. Meaning you want to do something a certain way, so the Bali Musar talk about different things that have to be done, and one of the things that they talk about is doing something habitually, and that will somehow change, you know, that's going to change you. That's going to affect the same internal, bomb blast to change things that a bad habit does.
So it's like an impulse that can be used either for ill or good. Right,
right. It's more than, it's not quite an impulse. It's an activity which gives rise to a change in your inner impulses.
Right, but the reason people form habits is because of compulsions, you know.
Right. Well, this is like a conscious compulsion. It's a guided compulsion instead of a spontaneous one, an automatic one, a reactive one. It's something that you direct. So he said, you can harness harness this mechanism by directing it. Chol hazocha, this is the fourth line in this section. Chol hazocha lishtamish bo karoi, and anyone who merits to use it properly, he nehu ham ushar, he is the one who is fortunate. Vafin nistavech ha'adam pehergelim ra, and even if a person is mixed up, like he's lost, he's entangled with bad habits, Yachuhu Adam Musakin Mimako Atzma Ratiya. A person can fix up from the affliction a healing, you know, a thing that heals. Meaning the affliction could be brought on by his habitual bad behavior, but then he can use that habitual behavior to implant good within himself. Lashanos is koch hahergel shenasa etzlo le'eva negef u'tzur michshol, to change this force of habit that was to him a stone that he tripped on, or that afflicted him, u'tzur michshol, and a stone that he tripped on. I don't know the exact nuances of the Hebrew. He can change it over to something that makes him better, like more kosher. Umeniya lavodas Hashem. Now this word menia, I couldn't figure out. He says it means an assistance to, what does he say? A motivational force for serving Hashem. Lisragel b'hanhagos tovos al yedei chinuchem musrim humas hargelim haroyim, and get oneself accustomed to good habits through musr type guidance or training. Humas hargelim haroyim, in contrast, or in conflict, or in opposition to these bad habits that a person has. L'okrom u'l'shorsham me'lev, that a person can uproot them and their roots from the heart. Acher Rishumam lo yehe nikar klal, to the point that they, that their imprint will not be recognizable at all. Meaning that the person has the, especially it's interesting if we look at it from a physiological basis, that the behavior created neural pathways. But when you change the behavior, the neural pathways change with them. So he says you can change it to the point that nothing is left at all. That through habituation, a person can change himself to the point that none of the bad stuff is left at all. Gam behergel ha-machshava. That the same thing is true with the hergel, with the habit of thinking. Yachol hu ha-odom lishtamesh b'koach ha-hergel. A person can use the force of habit. Lecholetz me machshavos v'anochos zoros shenikpu b'nafsho. To become freed from thoughts and presumptions, alien ones, alien thoughts and presumptions, shenikvu banefesh, that were imprinted into the soul, al yedei hisraglus kavua b'machshavos tovos, through regularity, the constancy of good thoughts, deos nechonos urikshe kodesh, proper thoughts and feelings of holiness, sheyishanu es kol mahalach machshavos l'derech tov, that will change all of us thinking to a good, to a good place, to a good way. So what he's trying to say is that the thoughts that are not exactly kosher, that become a habit, those thoughts can be changed through habitually thinking good thoughts. Now, how you do that exactly, I don't know, but he's going to talk about it. But again, he's saying that this is an irresistible force, but you combat it not by saying I'm going to resist it, because it is stronger than the decision of the intellect to change such a thing. But the intellect, which cannot change, I guess, let's say at a moment when you have a conflict, when you see yourself losing control because you're habitually doing it. But you could stand back and say, when I get into the ring with this bad habit, the bad habit always wins. I'm not capable of overcoming it. But I am capable when it's not a moment of conflict, a moment of travail, a moment when I'm being tested. I can sit back and say, let me do X, Y, and Z, which will form a habit that's the opposite of this, and then that habit will touch me internally in the same way that that it touched me internally when it was for something bad. That's what he's saying. Now, a few more minutes. It's 9:00. Should we? Couple minutes. Okay. All right. The chen roy was anyen besima slave. L'divrei ha-mechaber.
Call me back, okay?
You should also. It's worthwhile to, give attention to the words of the mechaber. B'simanim kuflam b'gimelkor. Those things don't exist in our printing. I don't know. There was a different. A different tagging of the paragraphs, or there was a part of the book that's not here. Those things don't exist in this simonim. It sounds like paragraph headings 133 and 4 and 211. I don't know. Binyan shelo lishma, pertaining to the issue of shelo lishma, shehu inyan mesuvach v'kosha etzel halomdim. It's a difficult matter by those who learn Torah. V'chol ha'oskim b'Torah, anyone who's involved with Torah. Now, the thing with Shelo L'shma is a pretty tricky. It's a little bit of a topic in and of itself. The Shlol Lishma has to do with when you do a mitzvah, a person learns Torah. So ideally, it should be done in the service of Hashem. It's done to serve the Almighty, which means that a person goes ahead and says, "I'm going to serve the Almighty by doing this." The Gemara seems to say good things and bad things about doing this. There's actually a Tosos about it, and the Gemara and Pesachim. But in one place it says, "Lolam yulmar adam shlo lishma, shemitoch shlo lishma boyin lishma." That a person learns should learn Shlo Lishma. He should learn not for the sake of serving Hashem. He'll learn so that he'll be honored as a Talmud Chacham. He'll be honored as a righteous person. So a person can do something good with the intention that through doing good, he or she will be honored as a righteous person. That's okay. Then in other places it says that if you learn Shlo Lishma, it's better not to have ever been born. So there are answers given. There are answers given to this question. But he says that it pertains to the discussion that we're having here, because the discussion we're having here is about inner motives. And it's all about purifying one's inner motives through activities that are outwardly proper. And the Chazal seems to say that you could do outwardly proper things for inwardly improper reasons. So he said we have to understand this whole subject. To understand what I'm talking about, you have to understand the subject of Shlo Lishma. Because Shlo Lishma, that sugya, that topic, impacts upon what we're going to say here. Maybe we should stop here because we're going to launch into the Shlo Lishma stuff. But we're at least raising the specter of dealing with Shlo Lishma, Amir Tashem. Now, okay.